We are. Welcome, everybody. Let's call to order. It is 9:31. Miss Folks, would you do roll call for us?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Dr. Stenhoff?
Here.
Dr. Davis Wilson?
Present.
Dr. Davey, sorry. Present. Ms. Denton?
Present.
Dr. Rates? Is absent. You have a quorum.
Okay. All right. We have a hefty agenda today. In fact, I think it might be record breaking if I am told, if I understand correctly. So board, again, thank you so much for putting that together. For the committee members for reviewing that. Also want to say welcome to the people who are attending, who are outside the board, staff and committee. Let's go ahead and approve the minutes. Do I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Okay. Second?
I'll second.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay. Motion carries. All right. Agenda item number 5, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding complaints and recommendations of the boards. We're hearing complaint number 21-16, Sierra Walling. Dr. Davis Wilson, you're the lead on that.
Yep. And I do, Mr. Chair, want to help you out with just a small disclosure. Hold on just a second. Let me pull it up. Unless you want to take it, but there should be a script there for you if you in the
Oh, thank you.
It's yep. On the first page of the script, the disclosure.
Yeah, just one moment.
I'm happy to read it for you, but
if anybody would not object, just to keep things rolling, Dr. Davis Wilson, please read the script.
Absolutely. All right, so we are seeing agenda item number 5, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding complaints and recommendations to the board. A person or a representative of a person who has filed or received a complaint and who is present may make a brief statement to the committee. The committee may also have questions for those who speak. Please use only initials for patients or children and the complainant. Be aware that the content of many records involved in these complaints is confidential and the content should not be discussed in public meeting. Be advised that upon a vote of a majority of a quorum, the committee may go into executive session to discuss any confidential records or to receive any confidential legal advice from the board's attorney. The complaint for review today is 21-16 against Ms. Sierra Walling. I am the lead member for the complaint, so I will go ahead and provide an overview. Switch back over to my notes. That initials part is just important. I find it's helpful. All right. The board received a complaint on March 10th, 2021 from EK. The complaint was received via email and alleges the following. Ms. EK states that Ms. Walling submitted her 2 weeks notice by email and stated she would finish her job duties on her last work day of February 26, 2021. Ms. Walling sent an email regarding her resignation, and we've been provided that resignation. When contact was made to Ms. Walling's company-issued computer and to schedule an exit interview, Ms. Walling did not respond to any of the correspondence. It is reported that her direct supervisor, Megan Merritt, also a licensed BCBA, tried to contact Ms. Walling numerous times to determine her schedule for completing her pre-scheduled session and caseload dissemination, but never received a response. Ms. Walling stopped attending her supervision and parent training sessions immediately following the initial email she sent. She did not carry out her duties as a BCBA and left the families without the ability to be served. The concerns presented by the complainant EK are ethical code violations 1.04 integrity, 2.15 A through D interrupting or discontinuing services, and 4.11 B discontinuing behavior change programs, behavior analytic services. The board was provided a response an email from Supervisor to Ms. Walling in response to her resignation email, as well as an email from EK to Ms. Walling requesting that they schedule a meeting to do an exit interview, and a screenshot of an iPhone text message dated February 22nd from the owner of the agency to Ms. Walling, reflecting that they were disappointed in the lack of correspondence in the departure. When the board staff... Board staff did email the complaint to, apologize, my notes are a little bit all over, to Ms. Walling, and Ms. Walling did respond. Ms. Walling is not, as far as this time, is not being represented by an attorney. She did provide a timeline of events that outline missed work due to quarantine exposure, as well as the date as to which she decided to resign from the organization. Ms. Walling does state that upon resigning, which occurred on a Friday, that Monday she had no longer had access to any of the company issued emails, but that she did send an email to her colleagues saying that she was resigning. She did attempt to access her email, but was blocked. She also attempted the company computer, but was locked out, but received a lockout screen, and the computer was automatically shut down. There was no prior notice for Ms. Walling that she would not have any access to this information. It was blocked without her knowledge. She also alleges that any agency employee she reached out to an agency employee on LinkedIn, and that correspondence has been provided to us. She also provided to us text message exchanges where she agreed to meet with an employee to deliver the laptop and materials and supplies. She does acknowledge that she did not attend the exit interview that was scheduled for 12 p.m., as she says she did not receive any of the correspondence that was provided to her. Ms. Walling acknowledges that she was employed by that organization from October 2020 to February 2022. It was noted in the complaint that behavior analysts do not abandon clients. However, she states that at that time, all communication between staff was done via the Google Suites, and she did not have access to any of that information or an employee directory, and that she was blocked out of all of that information. Let me see. She states that there was no attempt to remediate or any correspondence that she received from her supervisor, and hopes that this is just a miscommunication and misunderstanding, as she was under the impression that she was relieved from her work duties immediately. Ms. Walling has relocated to Nevada. She is currently seeking Nevada licensure. I believe it has been approved, but was waiting for the fees to be paid. She does not intend to renew her Arizona license, and has signed a lease in Nevada and does not intend to leave Nevada, at least for the next 12 months. And that concludes my summary, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Davis-Wilson. Is a representative for the complainant present? I believe I saw somebody here. Bob? Sorry, I don't have your last name, so...
Sorry, my name is Herman.
Oh, Herman. Okay, you're sir. Showing up as Bob there. So,
yeah. Sorry.
So, Herman, do you would you like to make a brief statement at this time?
I don't. I think everything was covered in the summary. We don't. It was actually 5 days after the notice that our company had zero response from CW. That was when she was finally locked out of our EMR and our Google Suite at that point. And it wasn't until the text message that you all see that I sent her that I was disappointed. It wasn't until that message went out that she finally initiated contact with someone in the company, and that was the message through LinkedIn to RM. She's a great BCBA clinically. We had no challenges. We're just very disappointed in the way that she chose to leave the company.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you. All right. Ms. Walling, would you please state your name for the record? And you have an opportunity to make a brief statement to the committee at this time. The committee might have questions for you, but go ahead and proceed.
Full name is Sierra Walling. It's 9:41 a.m. on April 30th. Part of the written response that I had provided included a final statement, and it was reviewed in the summary that I did not receive communication about the complaint until I was notified by the deputy, Jennifer, and no attempt at resolution or mediation was made prior to me receiving this complaint via email. And as I mentioned, and as in the review, I genuinely believe that this is a complete misunderstanding and miscommunication. I had been under the impression that Team for Kids wanted to terminate my employment immediately, which is once I was blocked from communications and out of the company laptop, which is what ended up resolving in me not attending the exit interview and what I would also assume to be the reason as to why the complaint was filed in the first place.
Okay, thank you. Let's see. Okay, any questions from committee members?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I have a few. For Ms. Walling, I'm looking at the timeline and the attempts. I'm trying to understand what happened after you realized you were locked out of the system. Because I'm not quite clear if it was just that you were like, okay, I'm done working, or if there was other steps that you took to try to resolve or have a conversation with somebody about why, one, you were locked out, and two, how you were going to advocate for your clients if you didn't have the ability to transition.
So I had sent out the resignation email on February 10th, or sorry, not February, yes, February 10th, which was a Wednesday. And then I realized that I was blocked out on Monday. During that week between the 8th to 12th, I was on a COVID quarantine. Because my brother and his girlfriend, who I was living with at the time, were exposed. They tested positive and I had been exposed because I was living with them. So on that Monday when I went to log in to basically start the process of the transition, and I saw the emails and get everything started for my last 2 weeks, I had realized I'd been blocked out, and I had realized that I couldn't access my computer. With that, I don't have, all communications were always done on the Google chat system, the Google Suite system. I don't have phone numbers saved in my phone. I don't have, I didn't have access to the emails. And so the communications weren't able to be made due to that. And also I felt very emotional at the time. I hadn't received any communication that this was going to happen. It was a very emotional day for me. I take my job very seriously. I really enjoy working with my families. I get very attached to them. And it felt like I was just kind of getting, sorry. It just didn't feel good. So I kind of just said, okay, well, that's what they want. So I'm just gonna leave. And that's kind of where I came out of it with that. And I hope that answers your question.
Thank you. Are you familiar with the BACB's registry online?
Yes.
Are you aware that you can access other behavior analysts' contact information through that registry?
No, I'm not aware.
Okay. And you, for the email or for the text message that was stated, that was provided on February 22nd, you're not aware of receiving that text message. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes. And I didn't know that that was Bob's phone number, that Bob was the one that had sent that text message, if I'm understanding that correctly. That's right. What was covered in the overview. Okay. And I had reached out to an employee over LinkedIn on the 20th, and it was reported in the complaint that that text message was sent on the 22nd.
Okay. And but you received that text message, you just didn't know who it was from?
No, I don't remember reviewing that message.
Okay. Those are all the questions I have for right now for Ms. Walling. I do have a couple of questions for the other individual when you guys are ready, though.
Other questions from committee members for Ms. Walling?
Oh, yeah, I have one question. Between the period of kind of the time where you reached out and sent your resignation letter in, the 15th occurs, you're locked out of the system. Let's just assume that for the sake of this conversation, that text is sent on the 22nd. You have a LinkedIn conversation as well with a coworker. Did you receive an email to your personal email from the company seeking to speak to you?
No, I didn't receive any outside communication. If communications were sent, they were probably sent through the Google Suite, but I was blocked out of that. So I didn't get, so when there was in the complaint, there was a moment.
I understand. My question is, did you and your personal email, did HR, no. They wise enough if they wanted to get a hold of you, they have your personal contact information in their employment file. They have other avenues besides Google Suite to get to you, correct?
I would hope so. I'm not sure what their policies are, but I was not contacted in my personal email or my personal phone number.
And none of that was provided by the employer either, that they attempted to reach out other than the truce text message that went out on the 22nd.
Sorry, say that again?
I said nothing was received from your employer contradicting that statement that you just made. So we have no information of communications by the employer trying to seek you out during that period to set up transition of care, set up further information on your exits. I don't even see anything about, your last paycheck or anything like that. Like, we've received none of that information. So I'm just trying to see if there was any communication, but I'm hearing from you that no, you did not receive anything.
Not to my personal account, no.
Thank you. I have no further questions at this time.
Ms. Walling, question. You provide your letter of resignation, and then between that and the 15th, there was no correspondence between you or the company. I was just curious why there was no follow-up. If you did have a caseload, was there any attempt to continue or to transition your current clients over to another BCBA? And so I'm curious why there was a 5-day lapse between your resignation letter and your attempt to follow up on the 15th.
Well, like I said beforehand, I was in a COVID quarantine. I was taking care of my roommates who had COVID during that week. And I had notified Team for Kids that I was doing that and that I was in my quarantine. And so I wasn't seeing clients that week. I want to say accommodations. Plans had been made by colleagues that those clients would be covered for that week because I was out due to the quarantine. But besides the email that I had sent explaining my resignation and the email that I sent to my colleague saying goodbye and asking for a transition of care meeting, I did receive an email from Megan that evening responding to my goodbye to ask for a schedule of a transfer case meeting. And I hadn't had a chance to respond just because I was taking care of my roommates. And the plan was to get that all sorted out on Monday and just wasn't able to.
Because the computer or the access was denied.
Correct.
Okay. All right. I don't have any further questions. Any other questions for Ms. Walling? Okay. Herman, or I guess BH. Are there any questions for BH at this time?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I have a few. Okay. My first one is going to be, so it was you that sent the text message that was included in the documentation, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And did you, I mean, I see that it was red. I think the part that is throwing me off is that the top of the text message still says new iMessage and still has the cursor for as if it's going to be sent.
Mm-hmm.
Did you make an, other than that text message, did you make any other attempts to reach out to Ms. Walling?
I had not known. By the time I sent that message, that was after unsuccessful attempts from MM and EK.
And do you have documentation of, other than the email response to the resignation requesting the to set up the meeting, do you have any documentation from the other behavior analysts trying to make those contacts?
I do not have any. I would have to go through our Google Suite vault to access the chat messages and the emails to look that up.
And okay. And do they generally have access? Cause I'm just trying to figure out how they would have continued to try to get a hold of her or did where the disconnect was. Cause if it was all going through the Google Suites, we know she was locked out of the Google Suites. So did the other BCBA have access to her personal information?
Yes. And we both also left the voicemail, which were not returned.
And what is your guys, can you walk me through your general termination process? Like what the decision factor was to just shut down all of the Google Suites correspondence and why there was not a formal kind of resolution from HR ending the employment?
So our standard policy is to allow an employee to complete their notice and make sure whether it's a clinical or a professional or clinical or administrative position to get all their work completed. And then to do that exit interview where we actually ask them questions regarding their employment at Team for Kids, gather any equipment back from them. And at the time when there was zero responses from CW, from the voicemails, from text messages, from emails, that was when I made the decision until we were going to hear from her was to lock her out of her account. Just from a privacy standpoint, we felt at that point, we have a very clear policy in place for anyone that is under has symptoms or exposed or tests for COVID-19, and none of those were followed either. And so at that point we felt that we would just lock her out until she was ready to communicate with us on what her intentions were, since we weren't getting anything from her.
And can you confirm, so it was her personal cell phone number, but her work emails that you were corresponding with?
We were using both after she had resigned. The message, the voicemail that was left, that was on her personal cell phone, and then the text message, that was after she was locked out. Nobody was getting any responses from her in the company correspondences. So at that point, once she was locked out, we chose to communicate with her through her personal device.
Thank you. And can you tell me what her like normal work schedule was? Is it a Monday through Friday job? Was it dependent on clients? What was a normal work schedule like?
The work schedule was fairly flexible. It was Monday through Friday. We allow our BCBAs to have the autonomy to manage their caseloads based on how they see fit. There's no, whether what's best for the patient, whether it's in the clinic setting, the home setting. They're allowed to work from home. There's not like an office they have to come to every day.
Thank you. I have no further questions at this time.
Mr. Chair, I have a couple questions. Mr. Herman, Talk to me a little bit about what your expectation of this BCBA, LBA was once you locked her out. Like, what did you think was going to occur once you locked her out of the ability to communicate with both your team, yourself, her team, and others within your organization?
My expectation was that she would reach out to us and ask us why she was locked out, since we weren't getting any response from her. It was more from a privacy, you know, HIPAA with the client. She had resigned, and we had no way of knowing whether she was going to continue working, or, you know, if she had resigned but had no intention, because we didn't know she wasn't communicating with us. At that point, we felt if she's no longer an employee, she should no longer have access to client records.
But wasn't she still an employee? Were you not allowing her to work out her last 2 weeks?
Well, she had put in a resignation, but she wasn't working. She had not communicated. She wasn't following our COVID protocols. She completely cut off communication with us. So for us to not know whether or not she is still going to work out her resignation, we decided to push pause on her access to our information. So she decided to.
And you were aware that she had had exposure to COVID, had roommates that had tested positive during this period? I mean, we're talking, what, February 2020, kind of in the height of things. And you were aware of this, that had occurred?
Sorry, if I may interject. It's February. It was February 2021. This was,
okay,
this
was sorry. It was February 21. So you're aware of what had occurred?
I was not aware of it. No.
Was your HR personnel aware? Other staff? Yes. Organization?
Yes. HR was aware and explained to her to follow our protocols, and none of them were followed.
And what are those protocols?
We had a contract with a mobile rapid site that would do testing and go to an employee if they didn't feel comfortable going anywhere to get tested to see if they were. And then we had our own policies and procedures based on the exposure level. If they tested positive, you know, staying home from work, not working.
Okay. No other questions at this time. Oh, actually, I had one other question following on Dr. Davis-Wilson's. Is your HR team aware that they can contact BCBAs through not like the BACB portal as well, which is linked to their personal email accounts?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions to either party this time?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I have one for Mr. Herman. There were 6 clients affected by this, and potentially 4 more coming down the pipeline, as I understand. Where are those clients now? Were you guys able to transition services to another BCBA? Were you able to refer the families out? What is kind of the status of those cases?
Yes, those cases were transitioned over to MM prior to maternity leave and then given over to another BCBA, RM, to help with that.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay. All right, so the committee will now begin their deliberation. Please note the deliberation is the time for committee members to deliberate the case among themselves without interruptions from complainants, licensees, or attorneys representing licensees. Dr. Davis-Wilson, since you're the lead on the case, will you please begin the deliberations?
Yes, I will. So I'm a little bit having experience in agency ownership, also understanding our code, I'm a little bit taken back by kind of both sides of the circumstances here. On one side, I'm confused as to why there was not, for me personally, I would have panicked that I wasn't able to figure out what was happening with my clients. I would have made every effort to contact my direct supervisor, whether it was through LinkedIn, whether it was through the BACB. It appears to me that there was not any attempts to try to figure out, okay, how do I make sure, bottom line, my clients are taken care of? So I'm concerned about that. On that flip side, I also understand that in a typical employment, so if I worked at, you know, Target or a different place, and I lost access to everything, then I would assume that I wasn't welcome and that my employment had ended. And typically what we see in those cases from an HR is several formal attempts from an HR representative to kind of close up that employment. So like what Dr. Davey was saying, here's your last paycheck, here's how we're going to get the supplies, here's how we're going to do all of that. However, I also hear that, and being in home-based care, I understand this kind of confusion of, you know, the BCBAs make their own schedules. So are they working? Are they not? At what point do we pull that trigger of client privacy? And at what point do we, you know, do we take a stance? So I'm still a little bit confused as far as the timelines. I know COVID kind of muddies up a little bit of everything. I have concerns ultimately that that at the end of the day, this BCBA probably should have done more to ensure, even if it was a contact of, hey, I've been locked out of all of my stuff. And even if that response back was, yeah, we don't want you here anymore. I'm concerned that it was just kind of like this assumption of like, okay, well, I guess everything is going to be taken care of. So I'll turn that over for discussion.
Thank you. I think I'll just add to that. I look at this and I share the same concern for Sierra that there should have been a little bit more effort going out towards making sure that those clients were taken care of, even if it was just a LinkedIn conversation with someone of like, hey, were you able to spread out my cases? But at the same time, I can appreciate the probably the feelings that were going on. We have some information that there was some difficulties going on, not only in life, but then also around a job, and then being shut out of your EHR, like that reaction could look a little bit, or it could be a little difficult to deal with. I think for me, at the end of the day, when I look at this, I don't see a statute violation. I do see an employment disagreement. I do see some errors on both sides, obviously. I would echo what you said, Dr. Davis Wilson, that there are other ways to get a hold of people besides text messages and emails. There's still good old fashioned certified letters. If it's that critical of information to get to someone, it does appear that, you know, the individual was back on site to be able to provide materials or pick up materials. So those opportunities were there. And so it wasn't as if the licensee was hiding somewhere or not available on LinkedIn or for other conversations to occur or their access. So again, I'll just reiterate that I don't believe there's enough here for a statute violation, but I do echo that I hope both parties take something away from this and clean up their processes.
Mr. Chair, if I may, to kind of Dr. Davies' point too, you know, one of the things that came to mind for me was a little bit of concern from the supervisor, who's also a BCBA and has an ethical responsibility to make these attempts as well. And I'm not seeing the documentation that those attempts were made. We're getting the verbal, hey, we made multiple attempts, but there's not any documentation. And if I could give, you know, any feedback to anybody on this process, like that documentation is critical. Because the BACB has within its code, which is again then adopted into our statutory language, that it is our responsibility as a BCBA to make sure that we close all of those gaps. And generally speaking, in order to ensure that we've done that, that documentation, the proof of the emails, the proof of the correspondence, the certified mail, you bring that up, Dr. Davey, I've seen that done as well, like a certified letter that, you know, has a signature and says, yes, I received this information, to kind of close those gaps. I am slightly concerned that that another BCBA didn't make those attempts to close those gaps as well. And, or if she did, There's no documentation to show any of that. There's no documentation to show here's when I called, here's what I emailed, here's who I contacted. So we've got kind of this he said, she said. I'm still a little bit concerned about the clients at the end of the day. So we have six kids that potentially went with a gap in services and or could have had a gap in services. I think the expense of staff, immediate staff changes, the hardship that that causes for families is extremely difficult as well. And so I do think that the lack of kind of closing those gaps in the transition process or the discontinuation process does have bigger effects that I don't, without, you know, obviously it's not information we're privy to, but so I don't know to what effects the families experienced any gaps in services or any of that. But because of that, I don't know that I would, I think I would probably start with a recommendation perhaps for a letter of concern.
And Mr. Chair, Dr. Davis-Wilson, I think I definitely hear your point, but I think the part that I'm struggling with is that gap that may or may not have been created, who is responsible for creating that gap? Like, I don't question the fact that the BCBA needs to be trying to reach out and make attempts to that. But I also don't believe that there was the proper amount of communication from the employer in this case of what that needed to look like or providing that, or even as you said, the documentation of, hey, you know, you've submitted your resignation on the 10th and we, you know, we understand you might be ill. You know, when can we expect to hear from you? Like, where are those emails? Where are those correspondences? And I get it. I'm not trying to deflect the responsibility that falls on our licensee, but I'm concerned that this is, you know, this is a two-way street. I think you, as I said earlier, I see the errors on both sides, and you know, I can't offer a letter of concern to this employer, but you know, I do understand that our responsibility is to the licensee, but I'm just kind of struggling with where, you know, where we draw that line, right? Of like how much responsibility or how much onus is put on the individual when they are essentially locked out. Because the other side of that coin is you contacted our clients and you no longer work for us. What are you doing? You know, so there's all those things, the way that this played out. And that's why for me, when I review this, you know, I wrote at the top of my notes, this appears to be an employment issue. This is an employment contract issue, an employment exit issue versus a practice issue. I'll pause there.
Other comments?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Davey, I agree. And I too have gone back and forth. But our ethics code, I mean, really puts the onus on the behavior analysts. And I think that even the little bits of a quick email of, hey, I'm locked out of my stuff, was this supposed to happen? Or a, you know, not waiting a week and a half to find a LinkedIn message to say like, hey, I guess they don't want me working there anymore, so I need to make arrangements to drop off materials. To me, I don't know that the status of the clients was at the forefront of any of the transition process for the behavior analyst. I don't see any like, well, wait a second, what about my clients? I don't, other than the initial, like, I guess we can meet to talk about what the transition is going to look like. And so, and that's not to dismiss. I definitely agree that this is more of an employer issue. I think there's lessons to be learned on both sides. I'm just trying to look at it from the perspective of our code that does put, I mean, the code applies to the licensee. And there's a lot of other things that could make me feel better here, whether it's that, hey, I sent an email to the supervisor and she never responded, or I sent a text message and they never responded, or there's just, it was just almost like, okay, well, I was locked out, so I guess that's it. And for me, I think we have an obligation to prioritize our clients. And I'm not to say that that's not what may have been going through through Ms. Walling's head. I'm just saying I'm struggling to see where that came across, that there wasn't any closure or attempt to close what was going to be happening with the cases.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Dr. Davis Wilson, I agree. It's hard for me to know, you know, at what point does the transition kind of then move off of the BCBA when you're locked out, when you're told you're no longer employed? Like, what other opportunities are there for you to follow that code? And I agree. I think it comes down to a documentation, an email here or there from your personal account over to a supervisor would have been highly beneficial in this case, right? I mean, it's like, here, I'm trying to reach out to close the gap. I can't get in. I can't do anything. If this is it, this is it. Just let me know that you've got it covered, right? That would have been the bow on this, but it doesn't exist. And so I think that's where I'm struggling is, you know, the opportunity to be able to follow through with that point in our ethics code. That opportunity has to, you know, you can try to create it, which didn't happen, or it can be created for you by your employer, or that path can be shut down. And we've seen that in other cases where, you know, it's like, we're done with you. Do not contact people. Do not do anything. Essentially, you're done. And so, you know, there's not that kind of documentation from any part, from either of the parties here, of like, her last day was, you know, you were no longer to talk to our clients, talk to our employees, like, we are done with you. I don't see any of that. So, yeah, I, you know, dismissal, something that's very low level, non-disciplinary for the licensee, something to that effect. But I think, as I said earlier, and I'm going to stop talking since I just keep repeating myself, is that I think that both parties need to take something from this and clean up the act.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Davey, I just want to clarify one thing that you said, and that was that we aren't sure at what point her employment ended. And the way that I'm understanding it is it ended when she no-call, no-showed the exit interview. Everything prior to that were tactics to try to engage communication, but also protect the organization. And so when you look at HIPAA regulations and you look at those lock features that the organization use, I don't know that that is a feature that should be assumed end of employment. If there's no other correspondence saying, hey, this is end of employment and you're now locked out of this, there's a lot of reasons why people get locked out of things. And it's to protect the clients usually. So if there's, you know, 5 days of no correspondence, we have on February 10th, the individual emailed a resignation. By that evening, the supervisor responded and said, yes, we need to schedule something. And they didn't hear anything for 5 days. Then I think the concern is, are they starting a new company? Are they taking our personal data? Like, what is happening? We haven't heard anything. And as somebody who, you know, has had to employ that kind of feature, it's one of those of even a quick, like, oh, I can't get to you right now. Or remember, I'm out sick. I'll call you on Monday. There was nothing. And so they locked what Mr. Herman has stated to us is he locked it as a mechanism to protect his client data because there was no response. So I think in that case, if I were locked out of my email or I would be reaching out and saying, hey, does this mean we're done? And if the response is, yeah, we're done. We don't need you anymore. We got your cases taken care of. Or yeah, we're done. Then that's one thing. But I'm concerned that there was no follow-up to kind of that nudge of, okay, well, if you're not going to respond to us when we ask to set a transition meeting and it's already been 5 days, I don't know what you're doing, but I can't take a risk with the client data to just be openly available and accessible to you. And that is something that I know firsthand. I've even had to do. And generally what happens is we get that email or that phone call of, hey, so I resigned on Friday, but I went to log into my stuff and everything's locked out. So then again, that those would have changed, it would have shifted things greatly. But I think this assumption of, okay, well, I'm locked out, so I guess I'm just done working. It shows me that, there wasn't a priority, client first priority present.
Just as the dates, you know, the 10th is a Monday when the letter of resignation, the lockout happens on Friday.
Other comments?
And I believe the COVID dates ended on the 12th, right? So I think the timeline said the 10th through the 12th was out for COVID. So by the 13th, 14th, now 15th, they're expecting an individual to be back at work and they haven't heard from this individual. I think we have an obligation per our data security and HIPAA regulations to lock that information.
Do we have, Mr. Chairman, Dr. Davis Wilson, do we have information that there was not logins by the individual on the 13th, 14th? I didn't see that in the record. I didn't see that there was not work going on in those days, nor did I see that in the complaint. What I saw in the complaint was that she did not respond to them, the employer. I don't see any information where it says she was not actively engaged with client. In fact, again, I will get back to the point of like this being an employment matter. Like I didn't see any things where we had letters from parents saying my kid missed 3 days. I didn't see anything from the employer saying we had to pull BCBAs and RBTs off us. I never saw any of those things that would make me feel like that was the bigger point of this complaint. The bigger point of this complaint seems to be around the exit of an employee that did not go as smoothly as it should have. But I hear all your points and I appreciate them.
Other comments? So, Dr. Davis Wilson?
I mean, I was going to entertain a motion, or I was going to.
I'm going to make a couple of comments. Looking from a value perspective, if the client is central to an agency, if a client is central to a BCBA's task for their hire, there seems to be a lack of committed action to meet those values on both parties. And Dr. Davey and Dr. Davis Wilson, you both have expressed that. I understand that the release of the employee didn't go smooth, but there just it seemed to be a lack of retainment of relationship to continue serving the clients until such time that the resignation can formally take place. And then likewise on the other side, there seemed to be a lack of action to make sure that transition happens on the part of Ms. Walling. So those were the concerns I had on both sides. And it's concerning that it didn't seem like either party was all that intentional about trying to mediate the situation for the client. So. Okay, Dr. Davis Wilson, did you want to entertain a motion?
I do. I would like to make a motion for a non-disciplinary letter of concern, specifically related to the discontinuation of services. And again, just crafted around the idea of there should be some closure. Even if the closure was you're no longer employed here, I'm concerned that there was not any attempts to put the clients first. And that is why I would find a non-disciplinary letter of concern. Just outlining our concerns around ensuring that there's proper documentation in place to show that reasonable attempts were made to put the clients first. So, again, whether that be that you made a reasonable attempt to contact the employer and they said, don't contact us or our clients. Okay, I tried. Whether it be an email to the BCBA that says, hey, in a little bit of a bind, can you just confirm for me that the clients are taken care of? Cool, I tried, even if there's no response. I'm just concerned that it was just kind of like, okay, and moving on. So, but I agree. I don't think it rises to anything that could be disciplinary in nature and statutory. So that's my motion, non-disciplinary letter of concern.
So just to clarify, that would be a motion to move the case to the board. And the recommendation is to issue her a non-disciplinary letter of concern, correct?
That is my motion, yes.
All right. Is there a second?
I'm going to second it for the sake of having discussion. So I'll second.
Okay. So given that, any further discussion?
So, yeah, I think, and this is just this is me reviewing the notes, you know, talking through it. Like, I do agree. Like, I think that there should have been better documentation, and I think that there should have been, and this is on the BCBA's part, of how that was occurring to make that happen. You know, COVID-related issues, like, I get it, but there's 5 days in there where a quick email, lesser appropriate, a quick text message, something to show some concern for the client. And I would just remind those on the call and this committee that our job is, and this is the part that, you know, I'm saying out loud, our job is to protect the public. And in this case, I think the licensee missed that point during this period for whatever reason. I agree that it's not a disciplinary issue, but I have come to the conclusion that I do believe that the BCBA needed to or the LBA needed to demonstrate from an ethical standpoint that they at least attempted to close the gap or close the book on this chapter in their life and move on. And I have not seen that documentation. I will just pause by saying, or end by saying, that I think while the LBA is going to be the one that gets the letter of concern, I have probably more concern around the employment practices of this agency and wonder about the other BCBAs and LBAs that are employed there and their ability to reach out to this individual during that time to help close that gap. And so I hope that the agency and those that are employed by it understand that they need to look at their policies and procedures. We don't have the power to pull them here and have that, or pull the agency here and discuss those practices. But I hope that through this conversation, Mr. Herman, that it's become clear that some of that stuff needs to be a little bit better organized and documented moving forward, for not only your agency's sake, but for your employees' sake.
Further discussion? Dr. Davey, I agree with you. Ms. Wallen is going to get the letter, but I have some concerns that there was a minimal effort on the part of the agency, and the agency is the employee of the BCBAs. And I think there needs to be the overall protection of the clientele through the BCBAs to the clientele. And so that is concerning. And my hope is that there will be some change on that end as well. Some more intentional action to try to resolve the matters for the sake of the clientele. So any other discussion?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure if this is the appropriate time, but I would like to make a motion to go to executive session.
Okay. All right. Do we have a second?
Is that motion for the purpose of legal advice?
Yes.
Our options are legal advice or personally identifiable health information.
Say that again.
Legal advice or to discuss confidential health records?
No. Legal information.
Excellent. I'll second that.
All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Any opposed? All right. Move to executive session. Okay. So we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion at this point? Okay, then I'm going to call for a vote. Can we have a roll call vote for that?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Dr. Davis Wilson?
Yes.
Dr. Davy?
Yes.
Dr. Stenhoff?
Yes.
Ms. Denton?
Yes.
4-0.
Okay, so motion carries. Complaint number 2116 regarding Sierra Wall.
Before you move on, can Ms. Galvin give the licensee some information about what will happen next to Ms. Michelson, just so she has a clear understanding versus just what just occurred?
So the committee just voted to recommend to the full board that this complaint move forward. And in the board's consideration of the matter, the committee has recommended that the board issue a letter of concern to you for the reasons that was stated, the reasons were stated earlier by Dr. Davis Wilson. And you will be notified of the board meeting during which this matter will be considered. Our next meeting is May 10th or so. Jennifer, I don't think it'll be on that agenda. So
that was something Heidi and I would have to discuss if we have availability, but if not May, it would be in the June meeting at the latest.
Okay. All right. And then you can always call Jennifer or myself if you have additional questions.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. So, complaint number 2116 regarding Sierra Walling has been referred to the board with a recommendation, the complaint be moved to the, board, for a non-disciplinary letter of concern, regarding, the lack of contact with the agency and with, clientele, I believe that's it. So. Thank you. Okay, moving on. Agenda item number 6, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recommendation to the board pertaining to approval of behavior analyst applicants. For scheduling purposes, I'm going to recommend that we move items number 4, 16, and 19 to 1, 2, and 3. And then just after we have a discussion about that, I want to provide 15 minutes as the committee members have been assigned some new applications to review. So we'll take about 15 minutes to do that. But first, we'll review those particular items. Again, items 4, 16, 19 will be moving up. Okay. I want to back up really quick. Ms. Walling, I appreciate you coming and, is Ms. Walling still on there?
I think she left.
Okay.
She just left.
All right, here we go then. Okay. Moving on. Okay. So first, agenda item number 6A4, Brittany Messina. I am the lead reviewer for that.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I am recused from that applicant.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I too will need to recuse from the
application. Okay, so at this point, we do not have a quorum to move forward. So we will have to put that item aside. What are our options for that? Can we move that to the board or can we?
You do have the option to move it to the full board. I think the practice has been in the past just to continue it to next month when it is more likely you will have a quorum. One of our members, Messina, had a family emergency, wasn't able to attend today. And so if Drs. Davy, Stenhoff, and Rates are present all next month, then we can continue that matter. So I apologize. I didn't know that we had an emergency or a last minute recusal. So sometimes that happens.
Okay, I completely understand.
Thank you for understanding.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Messina. Okay, let's move on. Agenda item number 6A16. Melissa Ann Harrison, Dr. Davy, you're the lead on this.
Mr. Chair, I'm recused from this one as well.
Okay, thank you.
Very good.
Okay. Dr. Davy, I'm sorry. I also need to insert that I was one of Ms. Harrison's instructors while she was working on her graduate studies.
So. Very good. I'm going to make a motion to move to executive session for the sake of legal advice. Okay. I will need a second.
All right. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 All right, Dr. Stenhoff, before we go, I just want to make clear that you were just stating for the record that you were one of her instructors, but yet you can keep an open mind and do not feel it necessary to recuse yourself.
Much better said, yes.
Okay, that's correct.
Let's see. Is Ms. Harrison present? Okay. Dr. Davy, would you mind reviewing?
This is Jake. If I can, if she's not here, we understand that she was noticed. Do you feel as though you can make a decision on this application with the additional disclosures, or would you like her present if you feel that you have questions that need to be answered? Continuing this until next month, maybe telling her that she needs to be here, issuing a subpoena, or continuing this would be an option, or moving on and addressing this issue today would also be an option.
Committee members, do you feel you have enough information to proceed, or would you like her presence here for further questions?
Mr. Chair, my preference is that she hear this discussion and understand this committee's decision and recommendation to the full board versus this happening without her here.
Sure.
Regardless, you know, however we decide to move forward, I think it's important that she hear that.
Yeah.
That's my personal opinion.
Okay. Any others? Okay, do we need to make a motion that we hold this, or can we just put it on the agenda for next time?
You're muted.
Ms. Galvin.
You're muted. Still muted, Ms. Galvin. There we go.
My space bar does not work. You can just as chair table it and put it on for next okay. month.
All right, thank you. So that item, so agenda item 6A16, for applicant Melissa Ann Harrison, we will table that for next time, okay? All right, the last one that we will move up is agenda item number 19, Ryan Glasgow. Ms. Denton, you're the reviewer for that.
Absolutely, let me pull up my notes for him. So Mr. Glasgow is an applicant that we reviewed previously. We sent him out a first letter, to get additional information about the number of hours that he had accrued given the BACB's limitations on how many hours you can accrue per supervision period. So with this, I'll kind of review the previous information and then go into the updated information. Mr. Glasgow passed his exam in September of 2020. His graduation date from Western Michigan University with a master's in psychology and behavior analysis was in May of 2018. The supervision dates now appear to reflect August 31st, 2018 to March 31st, 2020. The state of supervision that most of the supervision occurred in was Michigan. There were some additional hours that occurred in the state of Arizona whenever he located here. Originally, we had an issue with Jessica Van Straten's hours, the 765, given that the time span was not sufficient to accommodate those hours. Since then, we have had correspondence from Mr. Glasgow coming in stating that he requested Dr. Courtney Backlar submit a final experience verification form showing some supervision that occurred in 2018, an additional 64 hours. He also adjusted his fieldwork verification form with the dates to include supervision that he accrued through February 12th. So with this, looking over the documentation, it appears that the total number of hours do now exceed 1,500 and do not go over the amount allowed by the BACB per monthly period. At this point, I have no other concerns and appreciate Mr. Glasgow's additional information provided and the promptness of his correspondence. And I would recommend that it moves to the board for review.
Any discussion from committee? Okay. All right. With that, let's take 15 minutes. Some of us were assigned with additional applicants. Let's take about 15 minutes to look at that. So let's about 10 after. Is it possible to integrate a comfort break in there as well in that 15 minutes for everybody? Okay, so let's reconvene then at 11:10. All right. So let's reconvene. Okay, so the next applicant we'll review is Allison Ring. Dr. Davis Wilson, you're the lead on this, and I am recused from this application.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I am. Oh, I sat down my notes, and I got to find them again. I do have one disclosure, and that is that Ms. Ring was a former student of mine in one class, and we have very limited knowledge. Well, I have very limited knowledge of her work or her supervised experience. So I do feel that I can be unbiased in my review of her application. Ms. Ring did pass her exam in February of 2021. She completed the ASU Master's and ABA program in May of 2020. She did note that she did some practicum hours under at the university under Dr. Don Stenhoff, who is a licensed LBA or licensed behavior analyst. She did just over 1,500 hours across four licensed behavior analysts in the state from May of 2019 to September of 2020. I did not note any concerns with her application. Would recommend it be forwarded to the full board for approval. Ms. Galvin, do we need to vote on that since he's recused, or can it still go over with the recusal noted?
You can do it all in one group. He would just recuse from that consideration.
Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Davis Wilson. Okay, the next applicant is Allison Peralt. Dr. Davey, you're the lead on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Allison Perrault comes forward seeking licensure in the state of Arizona. She indicated that she is also licensed in the state of Washington as a behavior analyst. She completed her studies at both Endicott and Ball State. She has provided information with regard to her employment in the state of Idaho by an individual who was a BCBA, as well as a licensed BCBA in another jurisdiction. Having reviewed the documentation and the work that was done in Idaho, a state that does not have licensure requirements, I would move to have this application go forward to the full board. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. Next applicant is Ashley Coker. Ms. Denton, your lead on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Coker became a board certified behavior analyst on January 22nd of 2021. She graduated from Purdue University Global with a Master's of Science in Psychology on January 2019. Her supervision dates were from March 1st, 2017 to December 31st, 2018 under Claudia Villari. She did receive her supervision in the state of Arizona, under which her supervisors were licensed. Documentation shows that she has completed the 1,500 hour requirement with 1,635.7 hours. At this time, the only issue that I saw is that on page number three, item number seven, the box that was checked is an empty box. Like there's not a non-applicable. So I'm not sure if that is something that we can overlook and move forward. I presume she meant that it was not applicable. However, other than that, I don't see any concerns.
Right. Anything else on that? All right. Thanks, Ms. Denton. All right.
Do I need to mention that I say that it moves forward?
For yes, please.
Approval?
Thank you. All right. Next applicant, Kara Craddock. Dr. Davis-Wilson, you're pinch hitting on this one.
Yes, Ms. Craddock passed her exam in March of 2020. She completed her ASU's Master's in Curriculum and ABA program in 2017. She received over 1,500 hours of supervision from two licensed behavior analysts from December of 2018 to December of 2019. She does have a blank, so it is blank on the application for question number six, which I'm assuming is an NA because it asks if you're not certified. So not a big deal other than to just get that corrected for the record. But other than that, I have no concerns with this application and I recommend that it be forwarded to the full board for approval.
Thank you, Dr. Davis-Wilson. And again, next applicant is Krista Leon. Dr. Davis-Wilson.
Yes. So Ms. Leon passed her exam in December of 2020. She completed her master's in ABA from California State University in December of 2019. She did indicate that she completed practicum hours with a supervisor from the university. However, all of her supervision was done in California, which does not require licensure. It was done in two sites, at two different sites from a period of November 2018 to December 2020. I probably did the math maybe six times and I'm still coming short about 300 hours, 298 hours. I'm showing two forms, one that totals 495.32 and one that 706.25. If I take that away from the 1500, I'm showing about 298 and a half hours, are short. She did fill out the multiple supervisor forms for each of those locations. And it appears like there might be additional hours out there. However, we don't have those forms formally. So it would be my recommendation that we submit a fair letter requesting additional proof of supervision for those 300 hours that are short.
Thank you, Dr. Davis-Wilson.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to just interject. Kathy had a licensing assistant this last month of dubious competence. And so if there are some omissions in the files, it's probably an oversight on my part. So I will help Kathy make sure that anything that was overlooked is retrieved. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, Ms. Pakanon, if you guys happen to have those forms and they just weren't scanned, then and we're able to have those in the packet for the full board review, I would be okay with that. So if you have the forms, but they just weren't scanned, and we make up those 300 hours, I'd recommend for it to go to the full board. If we're short those forms, then we'll go the fair letter route and request additional documentation.
Thank you. Very good.
Thank you both. All right. Next applicant is Christian Ortiz. Dr. Davey, your lead on that.
Well, thank you very much. Christian Ortiz comes forward seeking licensure in the state of Arizona. Completed his application in full, providing information that he graduated from Arizona State University, and then did some work for his master's of art in counseling and mental health, and then went through NAU as well. During that time, he was focused on, as I said, applied behavior analysis and had major study at master's of arts in special education at ASU. Application was completed in full. Individual completed their supervised work at Devereaux from February of 2019 through December of 2020. Supervisor was licensed during that time, had proper credentials through BACB and training. I would move that this application go forward.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. Let's see. Okay, next applicant is Eva Santana. I am the lead on that. Ms. Santana received her BCBA certificate in February of 2018. She graduated in May of 2017 from Arizona State University with a Master of Education with focus in applied behavior analysis. She received 1,649.25 hours of supervision under Tyler Godsey in California, which does not require licensure. A first additional information request was sent January 21st of 2021, addressing dates that didn't correspond between the supervision records and her verification forms. Ms. Santana provided the corrected documentation, and I don't see any issues and recommend that the application be forwarded to the board for approval. Okay, next application. Genoveva Mikado, Dr. Davey, your lead on that.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Ms. Mikado comes forward seeking licensure in the state of Arizona, completed her application, noted University of Florida with a Master's of Art in Education, focused on applied behavior analysis, also did some work at Pima Community College and NAU. Individual provided information with regards to their employment and supervision at SARC. The information that was provided shows that the supervisors were properly licensed in the state of Arizona and credentialed by the BACB, including their supervision training. And I just want to give a huge shout out to Ms. Powell for putting together that multiple supervisor at one organization form. It is outstanding. And with that, would like to see this application move forward.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. All right, next applicant is Hannah Lute. Ms. Denton, you're the lead on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Lute passed her board-certified behavior analyst exam on January 28th of 2021 after graduating from Ball State with a Master of Arts in ABA in December of 2020. She received her supervision from June of 2019 until December of 2020, all in the state of Arizona under licensed behavior analysts for a total of 1,609 hours. At this point, I don't have any concerns with Ms. Lute's application. I would open it up to the committee members for any comments. Seeing none, I would move that this goes to the full board for approval.
All right, thank you, Ms. Denton. Next applicant is Jacob Jarvis. Dr. Davis-Wilson, you're the lead on that.
Yeah, Mr. Jarvis passed his exam in February of 2021. He completed his master's in ABA program through National University in January of 2021. He did 1,600 hours with a licensed behavior analyst from period of October 2019, January 2021. I've reviewed his application and I have no concerns at this time and will recommend it to move forward to the full board for approval.
All right, thank you. Next applicant is Jocelyn Gidley. Dr. Davey, your lead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jocelyn comes forward seeking licensure, notes that she also holds a certificate as an elementary education teacher here in the state of Arizona. Application lists Grand Canyon as her area where she studied for, Grand Canyon University, studying in the area of master's or curriculum instruction. Focusing on reading instruction, then went on to ASU program, applied behavior analysis program through special education as well. Application is completed, lists her supervision and employment occurring at Bloom Autism Services here in Arizona, provided information on her supervisors. That information that was provided was also done through, again, one of the multiple supervision sheets. Then cross-reference with the actual sheets. Everything here looks to be in order and move that this go forward to the board.
All right, thank you. Next applicant is Julie Daniel. Ms. Denton, you're the lead.
Thank you. Ms. Daniel became a BCBA on January 28th of 2021. All right, she graduated from the University of Arizona with a Master's of Arts in Special Education. In May of 2018, her supervision dates were from January 2019 till July of 2020. She received all of her supervision in the state of Arizona for a total of 1,500 hours. The only area, and I hope I did not miss it, is item number 8, where she lists that she has a separate license, but I don't see any supporting information for that. I would presume, given her degree background, that she is a teacher. However, I was unsure if this would be any problem with moving forward to the board for approval. Her hours look fine. Her degree supports. She passed her exam. So I'm not certain if this is a problem.
I believe we need that documentation. Can we send out a request or ask whether Ms. Daniel can provide that?
Mr. Chair, committee members, this is Kathy. This may be my error, not hers. I usually get the teacher certification and I may have just overlooked it on this one.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Folks. And as Dr. Davis-Wilson mentioned earlier, if that documentation is available at this meeting, we could move this forward, correct?
You may.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Denton, anything further on that applicant?
No, so I would just move that if that information is there, that we send it to the board for approval, and if it is not, that we send over that first additional request for information.
All right, thank you. And Ms. Denton, again, Kelsey Webb, the next applicant, would you please review that?
Absolutely. Let me get to her. Ms. Webb, before I go forward with reviewing this, I will note that I was an adjunct instructor at the same time that Ms. Webb went through her program at Simmons University. However, she was not in any of my courses, and I do believe that I can move forward objectively and without any bias in reviewing the applicant. Ms. Webb became a BCBA in November of 2019. She graduated from Simmons University with a Master's of Science in Behavior Analysis in August of 2019 from Simmons University. Her supervision dates were from May of 2018 until April of 2021. She received a total of 1,474 hours of supervision in the state of Colorado, which does not require licensure of their BCBAs. For the additional hours to make up her 1,500,
She received 30 hours of supervision in the state of Arizona under Patricia Egan, who is a licensed behavior analyst in the state of Arizona. I do not note any concerns with the applicant, and would open it to my fellow committee members for any additional comments. At this point, I would move that it goes to the full board for approval.
All right, thank you. The next applicant is Madeline Carlino. I'm the lead on that. Ms. Carlino received her BCBA certificate in May of 2018. She graduated in May of 2020 from Capella University. She has a master's with specialization in ABA. She received 1,500 hours of supervision under several supervisors in Illinois that does not require licensure. I did not know any concerns. I'd recommend it move forward to the board for approval. All right, next applicant is Melissa Kreitner. Dr. Davis-Wilson, your lead.
Ms. Kreitner passed her exam in December of 2020. She completed her master's in ABA from Capella University in December of 2017. She did just over 1,600 hours of supervision in the state of Michigan from April of 2016 to March of 2018, and for the period of time in which Michigan did have a license requirement, that individual is licensed now, but during that period of time, there was not a licensing requirement. So I've reviewed the application, and I have no concerns, and I would recommend that it be forwarded to the full board for approval.
All right, thank you. Next applicant is Peter Alfano. Mr. Alfano received his BCBA certificate in May of 2018. He graduated in October of 2017 from the Chicago School of Professional Psychology with an MS in Applied Behavior Analysis. He received 1,554.25 hours of supervision under several supervisors in Illinois which does not require licensure. I did not know any concerns, and I'd recommend that it move forward to the board for approval. Okay. Next application is Ryan Glasgow. Ms. Denton?
Mr. Chair, I believe I have already reviewed this application.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. Yeah.
I'm happy to review it again if you would like.
We're okay, I think. So, all right. Next applicant, Sarah West. And I'm reviewing that. Ms. West received her BCBA certificate in September of 2020. She graduated in May of 2020 from Ball State University with a Master's of Arts in Special Ed, the major subject area in Applied Behavior Analysis. She received 1,504 hours of supervision under Diana Terry and Michaela Miller, both licensed behavior analysts in the state of Texas. One concern I did note was Ms. Miller's license wasn't issued until after the supervision period. Will Ms. Terry's Texas license extended the duration of the supervision? Do any other committee members note a concern, or can we move forward with just Ms. Terry's signature on the hours? Okay, with that, I think we need to reach out with a FAIR asking for an explanation of Ms. Miller's unlicensed period of supervision Ms. Miller's non-licensed supervision in the state of Texas and the overlap there. Can we go ahead and do that? All right. Okay, thank you. All right, next application is Tiffany May. Dr. Davis-Wilson, you are the lead on that.
Yes, Ms. May passed her exam in December of 2018. She is licensed in good standing in Hawaii, Virginia, and Pennsylvania. She completed her special education and emphasis in ABA program from Arcadia University in January of 2017. She did over 1,500 hours with two licensed behavior analysts in Pennsylvania, which I don't think their licensure is behavior analysts, but that's beside the point. They require licensure, just something else. from a period of August of 2016 to March of 2018. For one of the forms, there is 562 hours completed. However, the supervisor does answer no to questions 3A and 3C, but does not provide any written explanation as to why those experiences were not included in that those 562 hours. I guess my question is, no, I think we probably need that written explanation for the record, being that the application asks for it, and she did say no. So I was going to say it's not unusual for the first 500 to 700 hours to be direct care only, but I think that rather than making that assumption, I think we need to do a request for additional information and get a written statement from the supervisor as to why she answered no to questions 3A and 3C.
Thank you, Dr. Davis-Wilson. Next application is Zandra Galimba. Dr. Davey, your lead on that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. We have Ms. Galimba coming forward for licensure in the state of Arizona. We have information from her with regards to her degree from Ball State, where she earned a master's in applied behavior analysis. She completed her application and full, where she lists her experience in behavior analysis having occurred at the Center for Autism and Related Disorders in California over multiple periods of time, multiple supervisors. She has provided information with regard to her supervision. State of California does not require licensure. So in my review, I found that all things were in order and would like to see this move forward to the board for approval.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. All right, so next applicant is Ingrid Lucas. I'm the lead on that. Ms. Lucas received her BCBA certificate in November of 2009. She graduated in December of 2007 from George Mason University with a Master's of Ed in Applied Behavior Analysis. She received 1,500 hours of supervision under Deanna Wilson, who is a licensed behavior analyst in the state of Virginia. I did not note any concerns on this application. Recommend that it move forward to the board for approval.
Okay. Mr. Chair, committee members, this is Kathy. The Arizona education certificate for Ms. Daniels is uploaded to the committee folder in the G Drive, if you want to look at it. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Ms. Fox.
It's at the bottom of the list. I'm sorry.
All right, is that satisfactory to the committee?
I believe this is satisfactory. Okay. And I'm glad to hear that I was in the right as far as presuming, but this is this is good information to have.
All right. Okay, do we have a motion to move? Well, do we have a motion on these applications?
Mr. Chair, perhaps board staff might have a summary. This was a pretty lengthy list, and normally I can keep up with all of it, but I am quite tired today. So if staff could give us a summary.
Yes, Mr. Chair, board committee members, I can do that. Allison Ring was approved. I'm going to list the approvals and then the alternate decisions. So Allison Ring, Allison Peralt, Ashley Coker, Kara Craddock with number 6 corrected, Christian Ortiz, Eva Santana, Genevieve Mercado, Hannah Loopt,
Jacob Jarvis, Jocelyn Gidley, Julie Daniel, Kelsey Webb, Madeline Carlino, Melissa Kreitner, Peter Alfano, and I think Ryan Glasgow was approved.
Yeah.
Sandra Galimba and Ingrid Lucas, and then Tiffany May, fair letter for the verifier needs to provide an explanation for her no answers on 3A and 3C. Sarah West, Ms. Miller's unlicensed supervision needs to be clarified. Melissa Harrison was not here. She was moved to the next meeting. And Brittany Messina was moved to the next meeting due to lack of quorum. And I think that covers it.
And I'm going to add one more. Allison Ring, I was recused from that.
Yes, Dr. Stenhoff recused from Allison Ring, Dr. Davis Wilson and Ms. Denton recused. Well, Messina doesn't matter because that got moved. Recused, let's see, I have another recusal. Dr. Davis Wilson recused from Ms. Harrison, but then we didn't review it. And I believe that was all the recusals we had.
Okay, thank you. Do we have a motion?
Yeah, I will move that we forward to the board the list provided by Ms. Folks, and that board staff be directed to complete the fair requests for those that were listed by Ms. Folks as well.
All right, and do I have a
second? I will second that.
All right, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, thank you. Motion carries. All right, agenda item number 7, discussion, consideration, possible action on assembling a list of behavior analyst practice monitors. Ms. Pakanon.
Yes, Mr. Chair. During your last meeting, this committee had adopted a motion to move forward with a process to develop a list of practice monitors. However, this was predicated on obtaining Ms. Galvin's advice that the committee had the latitude to do this independent of board review and approval. And Ms. Galvin has indicated that the committee can follow a process that it determines is appropriate. And what I've done is I've asked the two representatives who are here today from AZ-ABA to speak to the element of that motion, which involves the formation of a committee to work through this process.
Okay. All right. Any discussion on that? Okay. Go ahead, Dr. Davis Wilson.
What are typically the next steps with that?
Okay. Diana, are you asking AZ-ABA or are you asking Ms. Pakanon?
Ms. Pakanon, what she's recommend? Sorry, I'm holding it together today, guys.
I feel you. No, thank you.
I wasn't quite sure if you were asking us either.
Sorry, Dr. Davis Wilson. I was sort of, I thought AZ-ABA had the floor. I apologize. So we met informally earlier this week, recently, whenever it was, and sort of, you know, talked about how this might move forward. So if the committee is indeed going to be formed by AZ-ABA, then Jennifer and I are prepared to, you know, work with them to accomplish the kinds of things that I was sort of explaining last month, where, you know, I envision us coming to them to an identified group of individuals just to sort of talk about the process. And AZ-ABA would take from that, listen for, you know, what they would determine would be the core competencies that someone would need to possess to, you know, potentially serve in a practice monitor role. We had talked about, you know, bringing someone who has been an effective practice monitor for psychologists to speak to that experience. We could cover, you know, from a statutory perspective, what this role entails. And I think that, as an aside, we need to make sure that when we prepare an order that involves practice monitoring, that we are including measurable objectives for the expectations of the practice monitor, so that it removes some of that fear and ambiguity, you know, from the practice monitor's role. So I think that we could probably have a presentation prepared for this group, you know, in the next 30 to 45 days.
Yes, and just to add from AZIABA's perspective, we have notified the board of the committee's decisions to move forward, and there is support from the board and members of the board to participate in a committee of this nature on AZIABA's end.
Thank you. I think this is going to be very helpful for future. Hopefully there are no future issues where it's needed, but I think it will be helpful if that does arise. So appreciate it.
And Mr. Chair, I think that from last month, the discussion reflected that either, I wasn't clear if it was if this ad hoc committee would include a member of this committee or a member of the board who is a behavior analyst. I think the intent was a member of this committee would then serve on AZIABA's ad hoc committee.
Okay.
So that would be a decision that would need to be made, I think, today.
Yeah. Dr. Davis-Wilson is nodding her head, so I'm assuming she's volunteering for that role. Is that accurate?
I'm happy to volunteer. I was nodding my head because I was in agreement, but if somebody else would like to take it, they are welcome to, but I am also able to assist.
Is there anybody that would like to do that?
Dr. Davis-Wilson, and you're not on the board right now of AZIABA, correct?
Correct. No, I had to leave that position to take this one.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that there's, because I wouldn't want there to somebody to raise a stink. I don't, not that they would, but so that's cool. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for doing that for us. Because apparently, you know, you're barely holding on and we're assigning you more work. Like, what a great
I'm like, normally doing great. It was just it was a long, long night last night, but everything else, I still call myself semi-retired, so I've got time.
Well, you look fabulous either way.
Well, thank you.
Slept or not.
So, any takers in joining the ad hoc committee? I guess I would be willing to, if knowing how much time effort would be required to participate in this activity. Is there a foreseeable number of hours?
And I guess from an appearance perspective, Dr. Stenhoff is not on the board.
Correct.
And then Dr. Dana Davis-Wilson is president of the board. And then to be on ASPA's, oh, not ASPA, I'm sorry. Never mind. But actually, I think those, it would still apply. From a perspective, Dr. Stenhoff, for appearance purposes, it may be more appropriate.
Okay. Well, since my appearances are more appropriate, I guess I could.
that is what I said.
I'd be willing to help out on the ad hoc committee. So,
and Mr. Chair, as I'm still thinking about your question. I think that that most of the lifting needs to be done by Jennifer and me and the AZIABA group. So I think you're there in an input advisory capacity. Okay. I am not sure that you have any responsibility to vet or approve or endorse anyone who becomes identified through this process. Okay. That's my perspective anyway.
No, I'd feel more comfortable if that was not part of my role, due to the nature of my my day job. So
no, I think this means that you attend the meetings and you field questions or, you know, provide insights or input. But I really think that that board staff does most of this work with the organization.
Okay, sounds good. All right, thank you. Okay, any other comments, questions on that item? Okay, agenda item number 8, discussion, consideration, and possible action concerning future meetings with stakeholders. Ms. Pakanon.
Yes, Mr. Chair. So I think we really need to tend to some housekeeping matters. With the conclusion of the most recent meeting with the stakeholders, we didn't set a meeting date. And I think that was in part because Dr. Davey was unable to attend. So I think we need to get a meeting on the calendar and maybe we just work through these one at a time. What I would recommend is that if there will be one or possibly two more meetings, I think we want to accomplish those by the end of the summer because this these discussions could lead to proposed statute revisions. And so we'd want to be ready to initiate that process in September.
Okay, well. All right, does Ms. Pakanon, do you have any suggested dates? Everybody can pull up their calendars to take a look.
Sure. So, of course, the challenge with summer in a typical year are people planning vacations. So I think we sort of have to navigate around that to some degree. I would target the next meeting for potentially late May, early June timeframe.
Okay. My suggestion would be early June. Late May, there's a national conference going on. So. Probably be some. So does June 4th work? Are we looking at a Friday or we would rather leave the Friday open?
We have a board meeting that day on June 4th. So.
Okay.
Would work.
That should work.
That wouldn't work.
That won't work. Okay.
The board meetings are typically all day, so it's hard to anticipate how long it would be.
Okay.
I better get that on my calendar. For some reason, that's not even showing up yet. Any of the new calendar invites gone out for June or May?
Yeah, Dr. Davey, I thought they had. Let me, I'll ping Krishna so she can start.
Yeah, because I don't see one on my calendar. I see one for May. No, that's a CBA meeting. I don't see May even on my calendar yet.
Okay.
Maybe she could make sure they went out. And again, I could have just deleted it in hopefulness that I know in the past. So then does that push us to the 11th? Is that what we're thinking?
The 11th would be open from the board staff's perspective.
I would be able to represent Aziaba on the 11th as well.
I'm open too.
Same.
Dr. Davis Wilson's semi-retired, so she's probably available.
I'm good.
Okay.
Well, I will confirm June 11th then.
Did you say a time?
Well, we have to give Dr. Davies some time in the morning for his bike ride.
No, I can do any time that day, actually. Okay. Got the crazy events earlier in that week, so probably Friday will be a day of physical rest, but not a mental rest.
Very good. So 8:30?
Oh, Dr. Stenhoff does not get up that early.
Dr. Davy? You clearly know otherwise.
8:30 sounds good.
So then item number two, relative to this agenda item, we've just not had the success, or I haven't had the success in convincing the subject matter experts that you had previously identified that we really want to hear from them and that they have valuable insights and perspective to impart on this group as we think about the growing and diversifying scope of practice of behavior analysis. So Dr. Davis Wilson had volunteered maybe in a peer-to-peer kind of approach to reach out to them. If you feel that that's still necessary or important, she did supply the group with an article that Dr. Moran had published recently. So I leave this to you to decide, you know, where we go from here. If you feel you still want to, you know, move forward with inviting someone, the June 11th meeting would be, that would be the invitation for that date.
So I'm looking at this list. We're looking at, what I see OBM and ACT, right? So really anybody that's outside the field of autism is kind of the goal here, right?
Ideally, yeah. And possibly even outside of the field of healthcare service delivery.
Okay.
Because I think that's the bigger concerns are how to, with when we think about application outside of healthcare service delivery, mm-hmm. Didn't realize my camera wasn't on. When you think of it, then client starts to be defined differently. And so I think that's where we're hitting that snag is if we're talking healthcare service delivery or we're talking in the school systems, we're pretty well versed and it's clear as to where our role is in you know, public and consumer safety. Where it gets challenging is when we're no longer talking about healthcare service delivery and the effects that our statutes may have on non-healthcare related providers.
Okay. So the people on this list, on the bullet, second bullet, these people have declined. Is that accurate to say, or?
What would be accurate to say is that I never heard from Dr. Weatherly or from Dr. Moran in spite of two follow-ups. In the case of Dr. Sundberg, he did respond the morning of our most recent meeting to question what he could possibly have to offer to us. So I just responded to him and said, you know, hold tight, we may circle back to you.
Okay. Which email do you have for Dr. Weatherly? Is it an FIT one?
Yes.
He's no longer with FIT, so if you reach out to me, I'll send you his new contact information, and I will strong-arm him. He owes me a few favors in life to be one of our professionals on our list.
So are we looking at Dr. Weatherly for an OBM person?
I would think so.
We don't want more than one in each industry, is that?
Well, Dr. Sundberg, Dan Sundberg would also be OBM.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, we probably need more than one just in case.
I know I have another contact that might be willing to do this as well. So for OBM.
I think that the conversation, Mr. Chair, if I may, is around making sure that we don't craft language mm-hmm. that either creates issues, or if we are going to craft language, they're aware of why we're crafting the language. Again, outside of that healthcare service delivery. So I think, you know, if we can come up with a few people, that's fine. I'm confused as to how ACT would be helpful, though, as that's generally going to be billed.
You're generally
clients, and I'm not saying I'm all for the representation of different scopes. I think the conversation came down to how our statutes may be applicable outside of the typical healthcare realm.
Yep. Okay. Sounds good. I'll reach out. I know some of you might be willing to do it too. So.
And Ms. Pakanon, for Dr. Sundberg, if you want to reply and see if he would like to join, I think just simply explaining to him that, you know, we have statutory language that essentially makes all behavior analysis a practice and title act, and that we want input from those in the realm of OBM to help us kind of interpret the language in, you know, outside of healthcare delivery.
Very good. Thank you. So if you, if any member confirms one of these individuals, you know, to be a guest at our next meeting, please let me know so I make sure that, you know, we coordinate with them for the meeting access and the agenda and so forth. And so the last piece of this would be just some direction in terms of what you want to see on the next agenda. It occurred to me you probably need to have the most recent agenda in front of you. So I just emailed it to you. And there were items that I know we didn't get to. I don't think I've prepared the minutes yet from this meeting. So I definitely need to prioritize that. I think we didn't, I'll wait until I make sure that everyone's looking at the agenda with me.
I have it.
I don't remember that we did a whole lot of discussion with the Model Practice Acts, or did we have just some cursory discussion?
I think we did have discussion on the Model Practice Acts, and that was specific to, we had suggested that as we talked about statutory language that we referenced what Model Practice Acts were out there. The concern that the stakeholders brought forward is that the questions they have of our statutory language is mirrored in the Model Practice Acts. And so, for example, the stakeholders have a concern about our statute being one of the only healthcare-related, behavior health-related fields that has a statute that not only says what we can do, but also what we can't do. But the challenge is that, which I agree, if we're looking at other health professions in Arizona and some continuity there, but the practice model acts or the Model Practice Acts aren't the best resource to combat that, because that's where that language came from in the first place. Much of our current statutory language is already from the Model Practice Act, much as that has come over. So I think that we left the conversation with kind of making sure that we weren't excluding those, that those are good resources for us, and then making sure that if Dr. Davey had additional feedback or additional thoughts that he was able to circle back to those, because I think he's one of the ones that has continued to remind us about those tools being available to us, which is great, but he wasn't able to be there to hear the stakeholders' concerns.
Okay.
Yes, and Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I do recall that conversation now, and I remember what came out. Another activity that came out of that discussion was to task our student intern to do some research of the language in other states, specific to do their definitions, like Arizona's include that restrictive language, and she will be presenting all of her research to the board at their May 7th meeting. So shortly thereafter, we need to bring all that research that she did specific to behavior analysis to you. And you'll see that, you'll see that the detail of what she found. And it may be that you'll find statute language elsewhere that you you would prefer over what you have now.
Okay.
So I think we'll leave that on the agenda in some capacity for the next, the June 11th meeting. And I'm sure you want to retain the number 5 from the March 26th agenda.
Yes. Yeah.
Number 6, We're moving in this direction of a work group or a committee working with mostly board staff, you know, relative to finding, you know, application efficiencies. So to me, that agenda item kind of morphs into that discussion, mm-hmm. unless you prefer something different.
Would that include technology as well to increase the efficiency of applications?
Mr. Chair, in my mind, it always does. It should. I even have suggested that because we know we're moving forward with a new solution, despite of the resistance being thrown in our way, we are moving forward. And I can see that, you know, we could have a core of volunteers who can do some things like, you know, test a new application for us, you know, and give us some user feedback, just so, you know, we finally get it right. I think that one of the things that the staff, we're going to be challenged because we're going to be so focused on what a new system does and how it performs on the back end. So having that, input and feedback from real users, I think, is going to be, you know, tremendously helpful.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Would the discussion about applicants providing more information and less work for board staff be included in there as well?
Yes, Mr. Chair, absolutely. For the committee's benefit, there's recent realization that the information gathering process for applications, slowly over time, it's been an accumulation of work that Kathy has been tasked with. And we've come to realize that we need to take a step back from that. It is the applicant's burden to demonstrate qualifications for licensure. So Kathy or her licensing assistant, we should not have to be pulling screenshots of information from the BACB website or from, you know, state's online verification systems. All of those functions need to be shifted to the applicant. We started this process recently with the multiple supervisors at the same site form, and we didn't meet with any resistance. So I think that just needs to happen. So it's astonishing how much time pulling all of that information into an application file requires. So let's let the applicant own that task and be responsible for it, which is really what the statutes and rules require anyway.
Yeah. Well, and I don't foresee any resistance. I mean, I guess there potentially could be, but the newer applicants won't have any idea of procedure until they jump into it anyway. Plus there's a fairly large carrot at the other end, right, that would evoke some of the responding to get it done anyway. So
precisely. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, committee members, yeah. You saw a lot of the multiple supervisors forms this time around. Mm-hmm. I'm curious about feedback. How did you perceive that? How did that work for you?
Very well.
That was great.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Good. Thank you. I've been pretty excited about it myself, but I wanted to know if it was working for you or if we should make any changes.
Mm. We'll geek out with you. It was fantastic.
Yeah, I'm going to geek out. I would say one thing I was just thinking is one of mine, that there might be a place where they total it. And then maybe a box that there is one that's not included in that, right? So they may have had four supervisors at site one, but then there's more documentation to, like, and that equaled 1,191 hours for one of my people. And then there was additional documentation was from a different site. So just something that might trigger the reviewer to know that this is not necessarily all inclusive. So just some, maybe just a few more check boxes that somebody might, in a totals box that might be helpful. But overall, okay. It was a dream to see that. I essentially split my screen on my Adobe, had that box there, and was like rifling through the information down below. So it was kudos to that.
Wonderful. All right, I'll add a box for totaling the hours.
And I think the total then is, maybe that's kind of the idiot light as Dr. Stenhoff refers to it. If I don't see 1500 as the total, then I'll know to look for more information.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It was a great idea. Only took us how many years to get to that point?
It's been an evolution, for sure.
So if we're ready to move on, agenda item 7, as I recall, we didn't touch that one.
Yeah, I think we started, but I think that'd be worthwhile.
Item number 8 from the previous agenda. Kathy raised a question to me, and we sort of forwarded it to Jean as well. That it may be that the way that the language of the licensure exemption statute, the way it's being construed, that may explain perhaps part of why the BCABA doesn't seem to, the perception is they don't have any value in mm-hmm. service delivery system in our state, because it seems as though, you know, they just really don't have, they just don't have a place, at least where the statutes are concerned. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but it was just something that we've been speculating to some degree about.
I've got a comment to make about the BCABA discussion. Mm-hmm. Is that in the scope of this committee and the board? Because it's a practice issue, unless the issue is related to licensure, is that within the bounds of or the scope of this committee? I mean, it's an important discussion to be had, but again, does it fall under what we would mm-hmm. be concerned with?
Mr. Chair, if I may, I think to some degree it starts to trickle out of it. The reason why I brought it up is because I was hearing that BCABAs couldn't practice in Arizona. And so I wasn't sure if that was coming from a misunderstanding of our statutes and if we needed to clean up language or if there were other reasons. And it appears that at the last meeting we had two very large stakeholders essentially attest to the fact that it's not a licensure issue, it's an organizational practice issue. So I think for that so I raised the concern as just a point of essentially asking the same question, is this a licensure issue or not? Mm-hmm. We had two very large stakeholders on that last call, and they said, even if you clarified the language, we still wouldn't hire behavior analysts or BCABAs because it doesn't fit in our model.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
So for me personally, that conversation was resolved in the last meeting.
Okay. So we could omit, is everybody comfortable with omitting that item for future? Okay.
So Mr. Chair, number 9 was just my attempt to create a place for any other discussion to be held that wasn't already reflected somehow, somewhere on the agenda. So sort of a, you know, just a catch-all kind of place. Then I think 10 and 11 really are the culmination of these discussions. And I am not prepared to assume at all that on June 11th, we will have the comprehensive list of all the possible statutory changes or all the possible rule revisions. I think that happens maybe a little bit later, a little bit past June, but we can certainly discuss those. You went through, you've gone through the rules, I think, fairly thoroughly, but you know, with every new review of the statute and rule language, you're going to find, I am certain, other revisions that you want to talk about and consider making.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Pacanon, if I may, I almost think the subject of the rules should possibly be taken off the table until we, and have that conversation after we have the revised statutes proposed to the full board, because until that time, we don't even know which rules will be eligible for edit to begin with.
Yes, Mr. Chair, that makes perfect sense in my mind too. So rule writing is always a challenge relative to, you know, timing. So there could be some rule revisions that you have the statutory authority to make now. There are some that are certainly going to come later. Do we, you know, address it all at once in one comprehensive package? It's more efficient that way. From a cost perspective, it makes sense. So I think, and it's also, there are a lot of approvals that we need to move through to even promulgate rule changes. So it does make sense to do it once rather than try to split it up into two separate efforts.
Okay. So we'll, just to, for clarification, we'll omit items 10 and 11 as well at this point for future discussion until we have more to talk about. Okay. All right.
And then, Mr. Chair, item 12 sort of becomes that opportunity to have, I think, some dialogue with the members of the leaders of AZ-ABA in terms of, you know, what did you hear in this discussion that, you know, you see as a training opportunity for your membership? So that's why that item has been suggested.
All right, sounds good. So we'll keep that on there.
Okay.
Okay.
Anything else that I haven't thought of that you would want to see on the next agenda?
I don't have anything else. I think that's a pretty full agenda too.
Ms. Papanon, perhaps we could provide both sets of the stakeholders and the committee an update at that time on the board's decision to recommend statutory language for the requirement of diversity CEUs. There's still some discussion happening and some verbiage things happening, but perhaps come June, we'll be able to update all the stakeholders and the committee members on the on those findings.
Yes, we certainly can.
All right. Okay, so let's see where we're at. Okay, are we good with agenda item number 8? All right, so let's move on to agenda item number 9, discussion, consideration, and possible action on Executive Order 2021-02, requirement to review waived and suspended rules during public health state of emergency for COVID-19 and impacts of the same. Ms. Pakanon.
Yes, Mr. Chair, you had directed me to reach out to the BACB to try to gain some insight relative to this temporary deviation and its duration. And I've supplied you with the response being, uncertain in terms of the duration, and of course, identifying factors that could play a role into that decision. So it's simply not going to give you, I think, the clarity that you had hoped to have. So this issue comes back to you for purposes of how do you forward any sort of recommendation to the governor's office on this temporary licensure waiver. It may be that what ultimately is recommended to the board and likely adopted by the board is simply a reflection of the fact that this is uncertain, and it's we just don't know at this time.
Okay. So, all right, let's move on to agenda item number 10, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recent updates from the Behavior Analyst Certification Board. Ms. Pakanon.
Yes, Mr. Chair. So really not the sole update is not magnitude that, I think that, we need to address here now and today. I just found it to be an interesting discussion or initiation of some discussion relative to the use of digital badges and micro-credentials and whether licensing boards are exploring the use of them. And just to explain the distinction between them, so a badge would be something that would be signify a single achievement. So if Dr. Davey rides his Peloton for 150 miles in the month of April, he gets a badge.
I made it that far this month.
A micro-credential would be an indication that, someone has possesses a knowledge, a skill, a competency, often an assessment, a passing assessment is associated with, earning that kind of credential. And I found it to be interesting. I would not have even conceived of this being possible if we had, if we were to remain handcuffed to our current licensure system. But with the new system that we'll be adopting, I see some exciting potential here. There's always some danger though in being sort of the first regulatory board to incorporate innovations like this. It tends to make other regulators panic a little bit, but I do see that this might have some use in the CE space at a minimum. So I'm excited about the potential that these hold. I just thought I would share it because the conversation is starting, and it would be interesting and exciting, I think, to be on the leading edge of these innovations.
All right, thank you. Let's see, agenda item number 11, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding proposed legislation, including but not limited to the three listed there. Ms. Pakanon, Ms. Pakanon, yeah.
Yes, and the list keeps shrinking. So there's fortuitously, there's fewer and fewer topics or fewer and fewer bills to talk about. So just the new updates. So House Bill 2267, this is the one where we would be required to adjust our fees on an annual basis. I think that bill is done. I don't think that it's going to move forward. The fiscal note that was associated with it, although it found that it would reduce revenues to the general fund by only $6 million, not a lot in the scheme of things, that may have been sufficient to torpedo this bill entirely. So this is a sense of relief, at least on our part at the staff level. But I think this idea is far from over. I think if I'm correct that this bill is not going to cross the finish line, we're going to see something or an iteration of this idea next year. The major update to House Bill 2454, this is the telehealth bill. The plot twist that occurred yesterday is that this bill was passed by both chambers. It was modified by the Senate most recently. And I think the only amendment addressed prescription privilege issues. So I wasn't following that very closely, but it has been, the concurrence has been reached by the two chambers. They've reconciled the differences in the bill and it's been transmitted to the governor. But the plot twist is that there's an emergency provision associated with it, which means that everything about this bill, once signed by the governor, is in effect. So there's telepractice or telehealth expansion. Insurers will be required to conform to all the changes in the bill, specific to payment and reimbursements. The part that's causing me some panic is that the registry will have to be created very, very quickly in order to enable the out-of-state licensees to practice via telehealth in Arizona. That's not something that can be put together very quickly. So I'm going to have to figure out, you know, how we do that and what that looks like. And the challenge being, of course, we are not even functioning, you know, our applications through an existing system. That system, in all likelihood, could not accommodate the addition of this registry piece into it. And so the system that we are soon acquiring will have to include this functionality. And that's simply going to take time. So I don't know if we then create a registry in an Excel spreadsheet or what we do, but I'm going to be looking for a short-term solution, all the while planning on a better long-term solution for this registry. Do you have any questions about this?
I don't.
Okay. So then I think that's all I wanted. Yep, that's all I needed to brief you about in the legislative realm.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Agenda item number 12, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding information of application efficiencies work group. Dr. Davis-Wilson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. As you all may recall, we had stakeholders join us for our last meeting. They were concerned about the amount of time it was taking for applications to be processed. Through the discussion, we all kind of identified different roles that each of the players could play to make the process a little bit more efficient. And then ultimately, the stakeholders that were present requested and or recommended that we consider a committee so that they could help us develop some job aids to kind of train and support the behavior analysts as they go through the application process. I took that recommendation and request for the committee to the full board, where it was agreed upon unanimously that we could go ahead and form a committee with those stakeholders to develop job aids for the application process. So I think the next steps would be just to identify those job aid or those stakeholders and begin the work group.
All right.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I've just received an email, and as did Jennifer, we were copied on it, from Melissa Harrison. She mistakenly read my notice and thought she was on the board's agenda instead of this agenda. I do have the notice in front of me, so she was noticed for this meeting. She's wondering if you want her to join the meeting, or I do not know, with Jean gone, I didn't know if you wanted to wait. I'm not sure what to tell her. I'd like your direction, please.
And Mr. Chair, Mark Harris is still, we've been texting with him, and we just told him we don't need him, but I can retract that text and summon him to the meeting if he's still available, should you decide to go forward with the application review.
I would just say, as the person with the Harrison one, without Ms. Calvin present, I'm a little nervous about that. I don't want to continue to poke it down the road, but I think we need her on the chance that we need to consult with her.
All right. So, Ms. Folks, or Ms. Michelson, just let Ms. Harrison know that we will review at the next CBA meeting.
Thank you.
If you're corresponding via email. So, okay.
We are.
Okay. Agenda item number 13, new agenda items for future meetings.
Mr. Chair, I do want to note that if you were expecting to see the matter concerning Ms. Hartzell, I'm sorry, her first name eludes me. You did want to bring her back for purposes of, some questions concerning the supervision that she provided last month to an applicant. We didn't put that matter on this agenda, but it is, it will appear on your next agenda. I think it's May 20th.
Great, thank you. Okay, any others? Okay. All right, let's move on to agenda item number 14, adjournment. Do I have a motion?
So adjourn? Moved.
Second. Ms. Pakanon, can I speak to you after this meeting ends? Okay. All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.